Let's recap real quick. Listening audience, I'm with Ginger of Ginger's Parrot Rescue in Casa Grande, Arizona, 501c3 nonprofit bird rescue, rehab, and adoption organization. Specifically, now this organization is species and size specific. They're mostly rescuing Senegal parrots and cockatiels and birds of that size. And Ginger, hang on a second. I'm also in a place where I've got some noise I can't do anything about right now. But Ginger is an adjunct staff member of Oasis Sanctuary Arizona, a Humane Society of Arizona partner, American Federation of Aviculture certified aviculturist. She has completed levels 1 and 2 with the AFA in aviculture training and a 2012 graduate of Susan Friedman Behavior Works Program, which is really great, listening audience. I Googled up Susan Friedman, never seen her work, but before the show, I did my homework, and this is a really great website to look at and person to go to for some aviculture behavior training. And Ginger has completed some training with the Susan Friedman organization. This is Dr. Susan Friedman, psychology professor at Utah State, who pioneered application of applied behavior analysis to captive and companion animals. And Ginger has been sharing with us about this behavior training from her education and experience, and some really great experience, and she's learned a lot, and she knows a lot of specific things about behavior training, specifically with positive reinforcement that we've been enjoying here. And could you kind of recap this, Ginger, for the listening audience, about the training, could you explain that basic example again of positive reinforcement you did with the pistachio and the rope ring? Sure. and that kind of thing. Could we go back there, and then we'll cover a couple more things so we can get this on the recording for the podcast?
Sure, you bet. So basically what we were talking about before is what do I do with a brand new bird that walks in the door when I'm trying to train them and get them used to being here in this new environment? And how do I give them some kind of a skill to understand what I want from them and understand a language, something we can communicate? How do we communicate? So I use positive reinforcement for that. The way to do that is to find out what's a motivator for that animal. And typically, the birds are motivated by food. So what I'll do is, an example I gave, and we can talk about again, is a parrot that was a wild caught parrot came into me totally scared, afraid of everything, and especially him. So what we would do is give him, outside of his normal diet consisted of pellets and fresh vegetables. But outside of that, what does he favor? So I gave him a bowl, and I put some seed in it, and the seed I put in it is sunflower seed, for example, and some pistachio nuts. And I went to see what he would eat out of that, and he went for the pistachio nuts every time. So that, I knew then, was his favorite treat. That was the thing that he really wanted. So I removed that completely from everything I ever did with that bird unless I wanted to train him. And training is really simple. People think of training as something that's structured. But every time that you are doing something with your bird, you are training them, whether it's a positive or negative thing. You don't know you're training them, but you are. So think about it that way.
That is interesting. Right, because they're picking up on whatever you do, whether it's positive or negative, right?
That's right. Every single thing you do, you're training your bird. So even the way you take the bowls out of the bird cage, if you have the ability to do that through one of the little feeder doors that most of the parrot cages have, you're still training your bird to do something. Now, is he, you know, rushing at the bowl, trying to attack the bowl while you're taking it out, and you're still doing it, then you're training him, it's okay to do that. So that's another issue we can address. But you're training your bird in everything you do when you interact with them. So it's something to keep in mind. So in this case, what I did with this bird, his name is Victor. And so Victor, every time I would do anything with him, I would just take a platform perch, which is a flat perch. It's very easy to put on the very front of the cage. I put it on his cage door just because it was easier for me. And every day I would put a pistachio nut on top of that platform perch and just go about my business in the bird room. He soon learned that I was paired then with that nut. So he started looking forward to me coming around to give him that nut, because he knew when I would come by his cage, he was going to get that. So slowly but surely, he would come closer and closer to get that nut. So the first few interactions like that, what I would do is put the nut there and leave. The next time I would put the nut there and he'd take a step toward me. And I would put the nut there, I'm sorry, and hold on to it. When he would take a step toward me, I would let go and just go away and do my thing and let him go get the nut. So think about the increments that it would take for him to get all the way across his cage, 30 inches, and get that nut. Eventually, he learned to take it from my hand. And how he did that is it was a high enough motivator. That was the only time he would get a pistachio, one time a day. He wanted it so bad that he just came over there and stood on that perch and took it gently from my hand. And that was the start of everything else. Because all he had to learn was that I was not going to do anything to him with my hand. My hand was simply the deliverer of the treat. That's it. Mm-hmm. It never did anything more. And so by doing that, it gave him that communication. Now, I translated that into doing some other things. Here at the rescue, I do all of the paper on the top of the grate. I use white paper and not newspaper. I do that so I can look at the droppings to determine what they look like for health issues and to watch for things like that. Also, Senegal parrots like to play on the bottom of the cage. Mm-hmm. So they can see their poop and they're not standing in it. So in order to change the paper in the cage, I would have to open the door, obviously, and put my hands in the cage. Well, Victor wasn't ready for that stage at the very beginning, so I used to put the paper underneath like everybody else does in the paper tray. Mm. All right, so what I would do is, now that he was used to getting that treat, I had him come get the treat, and he would take it to the back of his cage, which just was his custom anyway, and eat it. So then I opened the door. I didn't do anything at first. I just opened the door, closed the door. He was like, oh, you just opened and closed the door. You didn't do anything. That's interesting. But I still got my treat, and I'm happy. Next day, I opened the door a little longer. The next day, a little longer. The next day, I put my hand on the inside on top of the grate and then just took it off. So slowly, we built up to me putting in the paper on the bottom on the grate. And he was like, okay. He got his nut. He knew I wasn't going to do anything to him. It was a slow progression. It didn't take, 2 days. Like a lot of people are used to wanting the instant gratification of, I want to train this bird and give him a nut and have him sit in the corner and I get to do my stuff. And it's like, eventually, right. Yeah. And you're going to be able to do that if you work with the bird within their time. You watch the bird. You watch for their language. If they're dropping the nut, it's too quick. Back up a step. So if you give them a nut and they drop it because they're like totally unsure what you're going to do, they're nervous, they're scared, they're apprehensive, not good timing. Stop what you were doing and back up a step. Get them back into being comfortable with it. So this is the kind of thing I do with these birds. Is we do slow progression and small increments, and it's all about positive reinforcement.
And what about we talked about clicker training.
Yes. So I used to use clickers all the time. I still do sometimes with some of the birds that I taught in the beginning. But clickers have some good and some bad. Clickers have their place. Some birds are afraid of them because they're pretty loud. They do make a puppy clicker, which is a little bit softer in tone and not so scary. But what I have found is I just use the word good. So when they do something, I'll just say good as the marker. They call it a bridge to say this was what I expected, and then I give them a treat. So I'm marking the behavior with the word good in a very distinct way and immediately delivering them the treat, and it has to be immediate. They can't be fumbling around, and that's where a lot of people fall into the clicker being a problem, because they're fumbling around with their fingers, right, trying to hold on to the clicker and hold on to the treat and hold on. It's hard for some people. It's a lot easier to just say a word.
So use the word instead of the clicker.
Correct. So here's an example of what I would do.
No, go ahead. Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. I was thinking of something else, but I don't want to interrupt you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So what I would do is, if I want a bird to do something, when they're doing it, the minute they do it, I say good and give them a treat immediately. So it ties in real fast to what they're doing. And the treat has to be the highly motivated treat, the one that they favor, the one that's of highest value and held out of everything else they ever get. They cannot get that treat for anything else.
Right. And can you explain again how you arrive at what treat to use?
So what I'll do is sometimes I'll take a dish, a plate. It depends on the bird. If the bird's not tame, like in Victor's case, a wild caught Senegal, it wouldn't be harder. I just gave him a bowl, and I put two or maybe three or four different kinds of things in there that are considered treats. So that would be, because my birds don't get anything except pellets and veggies, it would be seed. It would be a nut. So I might put a couple sunflower seeds, a couple safflower seeds, maybe a nut or two in there, and just see what they go for and what's the consistent thing that they pick every time. And that becomes the highly valued food source, the high valued motivator, the one thing you hold out of their diet for everything else. And that's the one that you use for treats, for training treats. So that's okay. How you select that.
Okay.
Once you have that identified and you hold that back from their diet, you use that for everything, for motivation.
Okay. And can we move on to the Senegal parrot and the specific behavior of the parrot defending their own tree again in the wild, and how that works in captivity? Once again, for our listening audience and for our recording for the podcast.
Certainly. So one thing to keep in mind about Senegal parrots is they are not flock-oriented birds. And what I mean by that is, if you think of macaws or African grays or conures or even cockatoos, they're just you see them in groups by the thousands in their native habitat. In the native habitat of the Senegal, you're not going to find anything like that because they live in separate trees. The trees are usually and typically located in the savanna, where they'll be in small groups of trees. And so they will descend to their territory, their tree, to the death. And that is just the way they are hardwired. They're not flock birds. You may see them if you were ever in Africa. To see this, they're considered a pest by farmers there because they will congregate to eat together, but that does not mean they're flocking together. That's a whole different thing. So they don't go to what they do at night when they flock. The flock birds will all go to the same trees and they'll all hang out together. And Senegals don't do that. They'll go to their tree at that family group of maybe five or six. Hang out in, and that's it. And they will defend that tree because that's their life source. That's where they have their nesting. That's where they have their family group. That's where they raise their babies. That's where the pair bond is. And so when you take that kind of hard wiring and put it into captivity, you're taking a bird that is not flock-oriented and expecting it to get along with a flock. And that flock in captivity could be your family of five people, three kids and two mom, dad. It could be a husband and wife, and now we're a flock of three with the Senegal. Or it could be someone who has macaws and Senegal and, you know, conures and a whole bunch of other birds. And now they want a Senegal to behave like the other flock birds, and it's not going to happen. Senegals get the territorial nature built in, hardwired from the wild, and are considered aggressive birds then, therefore, because of the way they behave in a family environment in captivity. So can that be changed? Yes. How do we change that? We can change it to this extent. Behaviorally, we can train them. We can't change it completely. It's always going to be there. So it's going to be up to us to understand that underlying hardwired part of them and to make it a successful home environment and captivity for them. And training is key with a Senegal parrot especially. It's just the way it is. Their pair bonds run very strong, and I know that their pair bonds, when it comes to human pair bonds, their pair bonds can be to the point where they attack one person over another. Or they also deliver something called displacement biting, which some other parrots can do too, but it's very high in Senegal. And that is, again, same thing with the tree. Think about the tree. Here's this tree, and we've got five Senegals, and they're all part of the same group, family group. And a new guy comes in, and he says, "Hey, I like that girl." All of a sudden, the pair bond's going to bite the girl, Senegal, to keep her away from the intruder. So he's going to become in between those two. And that's where you get displacement bites. And that happens a lot with Senegal. So owners will constantly contact me, and they'll tell me, "Hey, you know, Ginger, I've had the Senegal for 5 years, and you know, he's been doing great, and everything's fine, but I have a boyfriend now, and he attacks me when my boyfriend comes in. But he doesn't even like my boyfriend. Why is that happening?"
Gender-specific issues, right.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's a lot going on there. It happens to be, you know, a lot of the, most of that kind of a thing has to do with the Senegal.
Because of the close bonding thing with the original owner or person that adopts.
Now here's, right. And here's another thing. I don't know that this happens too much with other parrots. I've not heard it as much. But Senegals do change allegiance from time to time. Mm-hmm. So I have heard of people all of a sudden, you know, their bird was bonded to them for years, and all of a sudden now the husband who's lived there his whole life too now becomes the favored person, and all of a sudden the original owner is no longer the favored person. And that tends to happen too. So yeah, there's a lot of dynamics with Senegals that are pretty incredible and species specific, which is what I do like, because I'm learning about them more and more all the time.
It is interesting.
And I like helping. Yeah, I like helping.
Well, the gender issues I know are broad and wide among probably a lot of medium and large sized parrots. I don't think I've seen gender specific problems with smaller birds like parakeets and conures. But when you get a little larger, like the Senegals, you have a higher intellect. And of course, and knowing about how they are in the wild, they're more individual birds, not community birds. And I'm just thinking about this from my experience grooming people's birds and doing a little bit of behavior training over long time working with birds over 30 years. However, you know, most of my behavior training has been oriented with getting a bird calm enough to groom them, you know, trim their wings, toenails, and beak, which is really just a matter of, you know, can I get you to hold still? There's not much science to it.
Yep. It's more about the flooding thing like we talked about before.
Right, you know, right. Is there some way I can get you to hold still long enough to lop off your toenails and few of your flight feathers so you can't fly up in a ceiling fan?
Right. So there's those kinds of things too. It's a different way of training, and You know, it's all about training. I mean, everything is training. But let me just make one thing clear that maybe I didn't make clear about the gender issue. Senegal don't have a specific gender that they're attracted to. In other words, a male Senegal isn't going to fall in love with a female human, or vice versa. I have a lot of Senegals here that are bonded only to me that are females. I have a lot of male Senegals that are only bonded to my husband because he interacts with the birds a lot too, that are male. So it's a different kind of thing. It's not like you would think. I do have some birds, though, that I have had come to me that were, when they are arriving, they'll give me the bird and they say, this bird hates women, just hates women. I'm like, okay, good to know, good to know.
I'm laughing because I've seen a lot of this in my grooming.
Yeah.
I used to do a lot of bird grooming and even did some mobile grooming service. And I'm laughing because I've heard this so many times and all these stories.
Sure.
And, you know, my bird hates men, or my bird hates women. He bites my husband.